Okay. Hey guys, it's Eric RPG, and we are back with another Castlevania retrospective, episode number 4. And this time, with me again is.
David McBurney, Family Master, guest from the Q&A Quest podcast on RP Gamer, brought back from the grave by a dark priest after a briefer than usual slumber.
And I have conquered the beast that is known as the Lords of Shadow Trilogy. And we'll be talking about
Yeah.
that in the weeks to come. But we are talking about Castlevania 64, which I'm calling because it's simply called. They did the millennial thing, the term millennial thing, but with just rebooting the series with just the name that it started out with for no reason. Castlevania.
In Japan it was easy to spot because it was called Demon Castle Dracula Apocalypse. So like if you really want like a specific like name to apply to this one, Castlevania Apocalypse wouldn't even be that bad of a name, but no,
Yeah,
they
but
just called
like
it Castlevania.
they call it Apocalypse, but there's nothing really apocalyptic about the game other than the fact that Dracula's alive.
I mean, that's always apocalyptic in my mind.
Like it's not like the world has been destroyed, so it's not
Yeah.
post-apocalyptic.
Well, yeah, if the world had already been destroyed, then like it would be Castlevania post-apocalypse.
That's kind of what Vampire Hunter D is, though, so.
Yeah, Castlevania owes a lot to Vampire Hunter D.
But anyways, the other game is Legacy of Darkness, and then we've got the two PlayStation 2 games, and those are Lament of Innocence and Curse of Darkness.
I've played all of these when I was marathoning every Castlevania game I never finished, and I have opinions.
And for the most part, these games range from decent to I wish this was what I envisioned the 3D version of Symphony of the Night should be, but it's not done as well. And
Yeah.
then the other one's just this is infuriating platforming.
Yeah, you can tell the shadow that Tomb Raider was casting on platforming in the N64 era. There's this certain idea of how a quote unquote like realistically weighted platformer is supposed to feel that sure feels like that game for some
And
reason.
the tragedy of all of it is that Castlevania 64 and Castlevania Legacy of Darkness were made by the same team that worked on Symphony of the Night. So how did they screw up so badly?
There's like 3D is hard, man. 3D is hard. There's also this one feels more like it was designed with the idea of like this will modernize and reinvent Castlevania in such a way as to like really bring it into the 3D era. And like compared to half of Konami's other franchises, it did a lot better job than Contra.
Yeah.
To damn it with faint praise.
I do want to do a retrospective on Contra, but I don't know if you'll want to join me on that, but we'll get to that eventually if we,
Yeah, I'm not
you
as
know.
experienced with Contra, but if you give me some time, I'll bone up on them.
I've played nearly all of them except Sea of the Contra Adventure.
Gotta get see the Contra Adventure and Legacy of War,
Or
made by
any of
Yuka the
the
Dolphin Cat.
two Chinese developed mobile games.
Oh, I don't think anyone's played those. Well, at least it'll end on a bittersweet note with Hardcore Uprising.
I never did beat Hardcore Uprising though.
Yeah, it's super hard. Same with Shadow
Yeah, I
Slavers.
probably won't, so I'm just gonna watch a Let's Play of it instead.
Yeah, like it's at least it's a competently made video game, which is more than you can say for a lot of how franchises peter out. Like, frickin' Gradius ends with, oh, this is a very not very good take on it that was sold on body pillows.
Back to Castlevania for the
Yeah.
64.
There's a lot to be said about Konami's
It was
output,
released
but
in
still fun.
1999, and in many ways before it was struck out of the canon by Iga's decision making. It I think is supposed to take place after Symphony of the Night.
It's in a very specific spot in the timeline, but I always forget where, because like all of these will have like what year they take place in, but.
Oh, it says 1852, and that takes place in ni 1792. So,
Yeah, so
yeah.
about 60 years later.
But, which is why Dracula, for the most part, looks the same. Well, Sort of. I mean, we'll get to that later, but
depending upon when you're looking at him.
But we've got two characters who one's basically Sifia, only not. Her name's Carrie Fernandez, who I think might have might be an off-branch family of the Bill and Ice family, so they might be related somehow.
Yeah, there's a lot of fan speculation on where that comes from, and up to and including the idea that Belnades was supposed to be Fernandez.
Mm.
Because there is certainly a way to Romanize that would end up basically making it
Fernandez. The Belmont character is Reinhard Schneider, who is not a Belmont by name, but there's still a Belmont.
Definitely a branch family. That one's interesting in part because... because
they share a connection with Von Helsing, who's, I think, in the game.
Well, there's also just the fact that...
although he's called Charles Vincent, though.
You know, same guy. Makes sense. But the other thing that's interesting is there is pre-release info about this game that just calls him Schneider Belmont, which raises more questions. Like, why'd you make him not a Belmont? Did you just give up on this halfway through and say, we want to make this easier to write out of canon?
But the fact that he's German might also lean to the fact that at this point in time, I mean, motorcycles have been made, so... well, not really, but I'm sure Dracula can use his dark magic to make it possible. Which is why Skeleton tried them.
If you want a motorcycle, they get a motorcycle.
You basically whip the motorcycle, they fall off of it, then you have to fight them.
Just like real life.
It's basically Streets of Rage with those guys.
Oh man, now I'm imagining playing this with Streets of Rage's soundtrack. This game's soundtrack is not terribly memorable.
No. There are some good tracks, but it's mostly ambient.
Yeah. Just, like, that's kind of where the game first falls down when you first play it, because, like, it doesn't have a memorable soundtrack, and it doesn't have a memorable sense of place, so you kind of end up with this thing that's sort of like, oh, this is fine. This is smeary and blurry in N64.
Mm. Anyways, depending on who you play as, there'll be two somewhat separate storylines. It mostly just changes cutscenes involving two characters, though. If you play as, Carrie, you'll get more cutscenes with Malus, who's a kid that's stuck in Dracula's castle. And then if you play as Reinhardt, Carrie also has an arch nemesis and another evil witch named Actrius. And Reinhardt's dealing with much less interaction with his arch nemesis, but he does run into a girl named Rosa, who you eventually have to fight.
Yeah, It's a story. You can tell where it's going the second that you hear that a child is stuck in Dracula's castle named Malus.
It's Malus, but it's basically a play on words.
It's so obviously just, oh, this is very clearly derived from the same root as Malus. What could be wrong with this spooky child that lives in Dracula's castle?
But, anyways, Rosa is sort of kind of Reinhardt's love interest of the game.
Yeah.
But, for some reason, when you beat the game and get the good ending, like, even though she turned into a vampire and you killed her, she got resurrected somehow.
Don't think about it.
Yeah. Did, like, God throw Reinhardt a bone or something because all the Belmonts are getting screwed having to fight Dracula all the time?
Listen, there's gonna be more Draculas later. We gotta make sure there's more Belmonts. That does remind me the game does have an ending system determined by difficulty and time.
Yeah. You have to get the game on hard, and then you have to get to the castle before a certain number of days pass.
Yeah. The day-night cycle doesn't do much in this game, but...
It
locks off the shops at certain points.
Each character also has different paths, so you'll end up going to different levels. Like, specifically once you get in the castle, there's a couple extra levels. Like, Carrie goes to the Tower of Magic, and Reinhardt goes to the Tower of Science.
And also
this Tower of Battle. And, like, they each go to the other fourth tower, but, like, they're slightly remixed.
Yeah, like, I mean, if you really want to play a lot, there's a fair amount of content in this game. It's reasonably long, given its vintage. Mm. I don't recommend it, but you can.
But if you do end up running over 16 game days, you have to fight a fellow vampire hunter named Charles Vincent, who has become a vampire. Yeah, and asks you to kill him before he loses his mind and then he starts attacking you.
So, you know, a bit late for that. Mm. But yeah, it's weird. The game's story is pretty... It's more detailed than previous Castlevanias, other than maybe Symphony, but it's still not much to write about.
Yeah. And when you get to Dracula, you find out he's not actually Dracula. Some imposter.
Soon to be a tradition.
And then you find out Malus is actually Dracula, which leans on the idea I suggested earlier about Chaos being the entity that controls Dracula, and he just continually finds new bodies, and since Tepes is gone, they have someone else.
Yeah, that's something that like the EGA games would eventually lean into quite a bit as well.
But it's like you do have sub-weapons in the game, and each character can use the same amount of sub-weapons, so there's the really pitiful knife, and the axe, which does not get thrown into an arc, but acts more like a powerful knife. And then there's the holy water, and that's it. Oh, wait.
I think there's a cross in... Or is that only in Legacy of Darkness?
It might be Legacy of Darkness. No, wait, no, it's also in this game. But the cross, is the strongest weapon in the game. It just does ridiculous amounts of damage. Not only does it hit multiple times, as long as the hitbox of the enemy is big enough, but it comes back to you.
All the bosses.
Yeah. It comes back to you. But most bosses have more than enough HP, like you'll probably run out of hearts anyway.
Yeah, they're...
You can also buy things in the game. You can also buy things in the game, and the merchant in the game is called Renan, and he's apparently a demon. Because apparently you need money in hell.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense to me.
And he kind of looks like Jane Reno. With glasses.
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit.
But,
It's weird. They had trouble adapting Castlevania mechanics into 3D, and that's never more apparent than here. Like, the whip might as well just be, like, a weird hitbox that only affects its tip.
Also, the fight with Dracula is weird. I mean, it plays out kind of like the standard Dracula with him teleporting everywhere and launching fireballs. Sometimes he will teleport to get right in front of your face to do a bite attack. But once you defeat him, his second form shows up, where he turns into a dragon centipede hybrid monster thing.
It's a different final form, at least. Yeah. I mean, they always manage to cook up at least a different weird thing for Dracula to turn into.
You're also teleported to some hell dimension to fight him.
Also soon to be a tradition.
Yeah. And, which is, like, I think the first game to do that is actually Circle of the Moon.
Yeah. That game absolutely does that. Mm-hmm.
But, that's enough for that game.
Especially because the next game is kind of the same game.
Yeah, the next game is called Legacy of Darkness, which is a new game that has... It's more of an expansion plus the original game, but, like, the original game had, like, two alternate outfits you could put on for each characters. They're in this game, but they're two other alternate outfits, and the old ones aren't present for some reason.
Yeah, the level designs have been rejiggered to an extent. You have to unlock the characters from Castlevania 64. You start out this game as Cornell the Werewolf. It's like 8 years later.
Who wants to kill Dracula? Because I guess he's a good guy.
Yeah, but he has reasons. It starts out with a burning village. I forget everything about it because it's not that interesting.
And you eventually have to fight the evil werewolf chieftain of your clan who did bad things.
Yeah. He has something that's not a whip, but its hitbox works exactly like a whip. It's him throwing weird energy darts.
Yeah. I always thought he just had a really long claw sling.
Yeah, it's weird because it goes out way further than his arm, so it basically acts like a whip. It's I don't know what the game calls them, but like they basically are little energy arrows that like once they reach about the length of a whip,
wind
they
cutter.
Stop.
Yeah, he's basically usually getting Yasha's attack.
Yeah, a little bit.
But
this came out like 10 months later. It was really like an immediate mea culpa. Like, here's the fall game. Maybe you'll like that better.
Yeah, but unlike Carrie and Reinhardt's levels, he has to do all of them.
Yeah, his campaign's longer. The levels have been remixed to some extent, usually to make them a little less infuriating, but...
Let's see. There were a couple new levels, but, like, the very first level is him being on a ship, and the ship's sinking, and you needing to get off of it.
Yeah, that level makes a real bad first impression. That's not fun.
And that's actually part of the first level. But, I think it's, like level zero, and then it just transitions in the first level.
Yeah, yeah. The thing that always strikes me about this game is people usually joke about, like, oh, the N64 controller requires three hands. This game actually expects that. The camera is on the D-pad. The C buttons and A and B buttons do actions, and the control stick is how you move. Mm-hmm. It's absurd.
Also, this game, along with Castlevania 64... like, introduced a terrible mechanic that found out its way into Iga's Lament of Innocence, where you basically have to do cage matches, where you have to fight an enemy to get out of the cage, and then move on with the game.
Yeah, it was kind of where action games were going with any sort of exploration, because it's like, when you get an exploration game, it becomes very easy to just walk around enemies, so this became the band-aid fix for how to do it, and... Mm. It kind of works when the game has really good action, but a lot of games don't, so it's usually
it's like a lame-ass fighting game where you're forced to fight enemies to move on.
Mash, 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 so I can get to the part that I was actually enjoying.
And the camera angles, they're somewhat improved in this, but they're still terrible.
Yeah, like, I played this via emulation, and actually, as far as N64 games go, it emulates fine. And, like, the actual way to make this even remotely playable is to map the D-pad to your right analog stick, and suddenly it kind of controls like a sensible game.
Also, you find out what who the Hedge Mage Vila was owned by, and you find out, like, Marion and Aldry's son, Henry, shows up, and you have to rescue him at some point.
And, yeah, he's got a weird mini campaign, I think.
And, you have to, I think, to get Henry's, you have to beat both Reinhardt and Carrie's game. But his is like a weird one where he has to rescue children. And it takes place after Castlevania 64, and he's a grown up now, and he fights with a gun. it's super powerful.
Yeah, depending upon how many children you manage to rescue in a given run, you'll get unlockables, as I recall.
Mm-hmm.
So, the weirdest thing about this game is how many parallels, as I look at it, that's like, oh, you guys played Resident Evil and Tomb Raider, and then you decided you were done. It's like, Castlevania 64 has the two characters that have a lot of the same levels, but some unique segments, and they each have, like, an individual character that they interact with. They also both have the Nitro puzzle that sucks real bad in Castlevania, because you have way more range of movement.
It's like, you're not supposed to jump, and you're not supposed to attack. So you just gotta dodge enemies.
It sucks. It's real bad. It's infamous for a reason. But, like... there's a lot of Resident Evil DNA in this for some reason, and that bonus thing is, like, the fourth survivor, or, like, Mercenaries Operation Mad Jackal. Both of those feel like direct antecedents to that weird Henry minigame.
Also, in Castlevania 64, Dracula's final form fight uses the exact same mission as the first boss from level 5, the giant cow bull thing.
Yeah.
The zombie. And it's a terrible track.
Yeah.
Which is why, thankfully, they fixed it, and they have it. I think it's a remix of Dance of Illusion.
Yeah,
and he looks like his second form looks like basically the demon from Dracula X on the Super Nintendo. It's another reason this game's terrible. It reminded me of that game.
Yeah, don't make me think about that game ever again. It's like, if you have to play one of these, Legacy of Darkness is definitely the one to play. But, I mean,
it also supports the expansion pack, which makes the game look prettier.
Yeah, I mean, although prettier, it, still not pretty. But
although it might come at the cost of frame rate.
Yeah, that's how a lot
which
of...
It, which is what this game is not really known for to begin with. So.
Yeah, I mean, like, it running... Like, N64 games as a whole tend to run, at best, somewhere between 20 and 30 frames a second, so...
I'm surprised Resident Evil 2 even runs at 60.
That game is crazy, and the fact that the company that made it went on to make Red Dead Redemption is very strange to me.
Mm.
But it's... there's a lot to go into how that game works, but I mean, like... It's not processing 3D environments very much, which helps it a lot.
Mm-hmm. But, those are the 64 games. Let us never speak of them again.
Yeah, they really... They aren't worth going back to unless you're very curious. And even then, approach with caution.
Like, at least Cornell showed up in other games, such as Castlevania Judgment.
He's in that, he's...
And Lords of Shadow.
Incorporated into Lords of Shadow.
Yes. Because
Lords of Shadow chose only to incorporate the strangest possible references. Like, I'm shocked that they didn't find a way to incorporate Sonya Belmont into Lords of Shadow.
Yeah. But, that's that. But let's get on to the EGA games. Lament of Innocence. Yep.
The first EGA game we'll be discussing, and not quite the first one he made, but...
It's like more like his third at this point.
He was involved in Harmony, which I believe came out just before this, and he was, of course, involved in Symphony, so...
I'm tempted to cover that Nanobreaker game as in part of the others, even though it's technically on the Castlevania game.
I have a great story that I always recount whenever Nanobreaker is discussed, so...
But,
if you want, I can relate that real quick.
Yeah, sure.
He loves that game, for the record.
I've never
he
beaten it.
He cares deeply about it.
It's but probably better than I never beat it.
It's fine. It's an attempt. It's another attempt at the same formula we'll be discussing in Lament and Curse of Darkness. But the best thing about it was that I took it to a PAX meet and greet to get it signed, and he just shouted in joy that someone had shown him Nanobreaker. It was the most English he spoke all night without an interpreter, and it was just said, Nanobreaker.
Probably because it was the first game he ever worked on that was an original product.
Yeah, well, it was also...
It's basically his baby.
I'm convinced that no one had at any point given him, had ever shown him a copy of that to sign. Because, like, I mean, you know, it was in the wake of Bloodstained, so everyone brought copies of Symphony of the Night or Aria of Zorro, and then suddenly here's Nanobreaker.
I mean, I play that game, but I have, like, no means to really do it at the moment. Cause, I mean, I do have a PS2, but I did one of those, like, mod chip deals where I didn't actually get a mod chip. I got, like, a boot disc, but I also got the, like, the door swap thing. But I end up,
those things, yeah.
But I end up breaking the spring inside of it, so it only partially works now.
That's terrible. Yeah. It runs okay in PCSX2. It has some bugs last I checked, but...
I could try that, but...
Let's get to Lament, which is interesting and historical because I believe it's the beginning of them attempting to rebrand the series in Japan.
Yeah. And I think it actually has Castlevania in the title there, too. It's like that...
I believe in Japan it's just Castlevania.
Yeah, I think in, like, Japan, like, they carried the Castlevania brand for, like, several games, I think, leading up to Aria of Sorrow. And then they went back to Kumajo Jensu.
Yeah, I believe it's Dawn of Sorrow, they revert back to the Akumajo Dracula title, but in this one, it's Castlevania all over the world. The given explanation for that at the time was that Iga found that writing stories that required Dracula to be in them to be restrictive, and that Castlevania allowed them to, like, oh, you can do something that's just in a castle, it doesn't need to have Dracula in it.
But it's also the first game chronologically in the series, taking place in 10 94, which is like right after the Crusades.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, notably, like, no games really try to hit the, like, 300 or so year gap between that and Castlevania 3, other than its direct, this game's direct follow-up, but we'll discuss that in a minute.
But, like, you play as Leon Belmont, who, after doing the Crusades, his girlfriend, fiancée, gets kidnapped by a vampire named Walter Bernhard. And the church doesn't want to do anything because the church is useless, so he went storms off on his own to rescue her. And he takes a whip with him, which is odd, because a whip by itself probably wouldn't do much damage, which is why eventually he gets turned into the vampire killer. When you run into
a whip of alchemy.
Yeah, it gets turned into a vampire killer with, like, ritual that unfortunately involves the death of his fiance, because they need to bind vampire anti-vampire powers by killing a person who is a vampire before it can be turned into a vampire.
Yeah, spoiler alert, she's a vampire by then.
Yeah. But
he's clued into this by his very good pal Matthias Kronkvist.
Yeah,
it's quite a name.
And you end up finding that Matthias is angry at the church because they basically gave his fiance false information and thought that Matthias was dead, so she killed herself. But
there's a lot to unpack in what happened.
But now he wants power so that something like that can't happen again, and he can have eternal life. But to do that, he needs to make the Philosopher's Stone, which means getting three other really powerful alchemy stones, known as the Ebony Stone, the Ivory Stone, and the Crimson Stone. And he knows Walter has the Crimson Stone, and he knows Leon has the Ebony Stone.
So, you know, just a good excuse to get them all together.
Yeah. And that's really a story, because, like, there's some side story with a vampire named Joachim, who's, like, used to be a priest, I think. That he went insane.
Yeah, I think he has a lot of fans, but he's not actually important in any meaningful sense. I think you can unlock him as a playable character as well, but
yeah, the Whip of Alchemy. You can basically use elemental attacks with it. So
yeah, like you can swap it for a flame version or an ice version or a thunder version. It's I mean, the combat is very clearly influenced by at the time fairly new Devil May Cry. It uses the whip better than the N64 games because you get, like, you have the square button that does, like, very specific light quick attacks that aim at a specific area, and you have the triangle button that does big sweeping ones that can hit large groups of enemies.
But you also use sub-weapons in the game, and you can use several different orbs to do special attacks with them.
Yeah, the system is basically wholesale the same as the one in Harmony of Dissonance. And, like, it's a neat system. It gives Belmont characters a lot more variety to almost match the kinds of stuff that you get as an Alucard or a Soma. But
you do gain items in the game, but you don't gain levels, which is weird. Because, like, this game, along with Curse of Darkness, feel like two different games that probably would work better if they just used both mechanics.
Yeah, if you take the best parts of Curse of Darkness and Lament of Innocence and you put them into a blender, you would probably have a really worthy 3D successor to Symphony of the Night.
Because, the biggest problem with this game is that it, much like other action games at the time, like God of War, you get cage match fights, and the platforming is kind of crappy.
Yeah, they knew the camera didn't work, and so they tried to fix it by literally fixing it in each area, so you don't have a choice of where it's going to look. But mostly what that means is that there's a handful of areas where, like, the game actually tries to be a platformer and you can't frickin' see where you're going.
Oh, yeah.
It's a bit of a shame.
There are two definitional player characters that you can play as after you beat the game. There's Pumpkin.
Oh, yeah, Pumpkin.
which is basically a tiny Belmont character, but he's a pumpkin. And he's like stupid powerful for some reason.
But that's great. That's very good.
He has no story, or you can play as Joachim, who just uses magic attacks.
Yeah, he doesn't meaningfully have a story either, but he's less of a joke. it's a fairly long-ish game. The thing, it's not quite a Metroidvania, because, like, you do get items that make it more possible to traverse area to area.
Mm-hmm.
The setup of the castle doesn't actually require anything from a previous area.
Yeah. Like, there's basically a hub, and then there's, like, a level.
Yeah, it's hub and spokes.
And then there's, like, warp points that let you get out of the level if you want to.
Yeah. And, I mean, there's some neat areas in here. Like, I like the Anti-Soul Mystery Labs, or whatever it's called. Mm-hmm. It's a cool area. There's good environment design. There's a really good soundtrack.
Pagoda of the Missing Moon is my favorite track from this game.
Yeah. It's one of those things where the game just never... It doesn't quite come together to be a really great Castlevania, but it does have a lot of good ideas, and I think it's worth seeing at least once, even
also,
if you don't
finish
it.
Also, a lot of the voice acting is hilarious.
I'll
kill the knight.
I'll kill you and the knight.
Also, Crispin Freeman's voice is Matthias, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, he does his great, like, very over-the-top Crispin Freeman voice.
And
it's good stuff. The final boss is Death, because you don't get to fight Dracula in this one.
Because he's technically not Dracula yet. He needs to use the power of the Philosopher's Stone to become an immortal vampire instead.
Yeah.
Because unlike other vampires, he'd just be turned and he would have less power.
Yeah. Important.
He basically just uses the power of the Philosopher's Stone to summon the powers of hell and become a demon instead.
I can't believe he just turns into Dio. Mm-hmm. But,
Dio. He's not nearly as arrogant as Dio.
We won't get to... Was the stone mask equipable in Symphony of the Night? Because it is definitely equipable in, like, Aria and Dawn of Sorrow. I think it might also be in Curse, actually.
I don't think it was equivalent in Symphony of the Night.
Okay, yeah, the JoJo references actually start going up as Iga takes over.
Yeah, because, like, JoJo has been around for, like, 20 years at this point.
Yeah, by this point, JoJo was well into its fifth arc. It might have been starting at sixth by this point. Yeah, it would have been starting at sixth arc by this point.
They hadn't rebooted the anime yet, though, so...
Yeah, we were still stuck in the point where the anime was. Those 90s OVAs that kind of cover the second half of Stardust Crusaders and this very miserable early aughts, like, prequel to those OVAs that don't watch them. Actually, no, I think Steel Ball Run would have been just about to start at this point. Like, Stone Ocean was almost done. Mm-hmm. Look forward to me pointing out a lot of JoJo references next episode.
Mm-hmm. Death is surprisingly difficult to kill in this game compared to all the joke fights he is in the other games.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Especially if you play it on hard.
This game can have teeth in a way that a lot of Iga's games typically don't. There are points where you'll get to a fight in this and it's like, oh, this is actually a hard fight that is difficult.
There's also a secret boss fight with a gigantic demon that's locked up in the basement.
Forever convinced that, like, I'm convinced that that's, like, the weirdly most violent thing in the game, and basically the inspiration for Nano Breaker is just paint the walls with blood concepts.
Also kind of remind me of the Lord of Flies fight in Symphony.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely got that
That's another thing I completely forgot. Like, in Symphony, there was another, sub-weapon, which is, like, the lightning ring, which just lets you hit a target, and as long as you have hearts and you hold the button down, it'll just keep zapping it.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Richter uses it better, though, because he just raises it up with Item Crash and just shoots lightning everywhere instead. And it's a lot more powerful.
It's not common.
And, like, he does kind of the same thing with Gray Ash, or the Holy Ash, but, like, he throws it up in the air, and it only hits some stuff up above him.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of a problem.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's a neat game. There's enough to it. That, like, it's also relatively cheap. I believe it was a PS2 classic on PS3. It's not difficult to track down, and it's not expensive. It's worth looking back on.
You should probably track down the soundtrack, though.
Oh, absolutely. Like that. Yeah. Visit Uncle YouTube and check that soundtrack, because it's fantastic.
But that leads us to our last 3D game, Curse of Darkness.
Yep, last in the original continuity. They wouldn't get a chance to try many more of these.
But this game is a direct sequel to Castlevania 3 or Demon Castle.
Yeah, Demon Castle Legend, Castlevania 3, Dracula's Curse. This game is... Iga's love of Castlevania 3 allowed to turn into its own game.
Also, it's the only other Castlevania game that has the distinction of being an Xbox game.
Yeah, that did come out on the original Xbox. I don't think many people played it there, but it did happen.
I think it's technically the more impressive version.
Yeah.
Being on the Xbox.
Did to be the case.
And there was a manga also, adaptation, apparently.
Yeah, I have a friend who owns that, because of course they do.
But its story is about a guy named Hector, who is a devil forge master, who was under the employ of Dracula, whose story gets a little bit more elaborated on the actual anime series, but...
The Castlevania, like, Netflix series, I believe, incorporates Hector and his rival, Isaac? What is it?
Yeah, Isaac.
Okay.
Who's fairly differently rewritten in the anime, and he's actually black in that game.
In the show, you mean?
Yeah, in the show. But, he's a redhead in this game, though. But,
yeah, he's a very pale red-haired boy with... I remember seeing art of him for the first time and being like, how do your pants work, sir? It is as though he is trying desperately to cover for the fact that he can't afford a belt.
Also, Trevor's outfit looks like it came straight out of Death Note or something. which is interesting because like the person who worked on Death Note actually did the designs for the Judgment game.
Yeah, we'll get into that.
Ayami Kojima is the artist for this game, so, like, were you reading Death Note when you made this character?
It's something. I would like to point out, this was in a November 2005 game, so it being released on the original Xbox is, like, the last period where that system had relevance before it was put out to pasture.
The point of this game is that you're basically seeking revenge on Isaac for having killed his fiance after he...
This happens a lot.
After he decided to betray Dracula and live in peace with his and find a girlfriend, Isaac was mad that he basically abandoned him and killed him in retaliation.
The gimmick here is that Isaac and Hector are essentially the ones who are in charge of making all of the minions that Dracula has. Mm-hmm. So they're devil forge masters, and that ties into the gameplay. You can like make what are called innocent devils that act as familiars to help you fight and get across areas.
Yeah, much like Alucard's familiars, only without relic support.
Yeah, but all that RPG they took right out of Lament of Innocence. They brought back double for this because you gain levels and your innocent devils also gain levels, and you use them to make new innocent devils.
Kind of like Megaten.
Yeah. There's some Megaten in there. It's actually a pretty neat system. The combat has been improved because you aren't tied to a whip. You have a lot of options.
You can also make weaponry and armor.
Yeah, like it's a neat system. Like the. All of the subsystems in this game are actually... They're fairly simple, but they're reasonably deep, and they're actually fun to use. Mm-hmm. This game's big problem is that it does not have enough budget for the amount of environments it wants to have.
And for whatever reason, the camera angle is pretty much over the shoulder. So
yeah, it's very specifically
behind you. You can't see what's behind you.
Yeah. But you do have control over it now, so it is possible to maneuver it around if you need to. You kind of get used to it. It's not perfect, but it's definitely not the crime that it is in the N64 games, in part because the other thing this game did was it decided that they didn't know how to do platforming in 3D, so they weren't going to bother. There's almost no platforming in this game.
Also, So Isaac eventually, along with Death, eventually resurrect Dracula, and you have to kill him again.
As sometimes happens.
Because apparently Treasure got, like, really wounded pretty badly by Isaac when he basically knifed him in the back with his sneak attack.
Yeah, Trevor just sort of skulks around this.
Trevor, were you, like, drunk or something?
I mean, that makes sense. That ties into the Netflix. What do you go with that?
Anyways, that's why Hector's left to defeat Dracula. But you can equip different weapons, much like Alucard, like spears, axes, and swords, one-handed and two-handed.
Yeah, they all behave fairly differently. They all control pretty well.
Oh yeah, brass knuckles.
Yeah.
Or special weapons category, which can vary from anything from tonfos to Gatling guns.
Yeah, there's some weird stuff in here. There's a lot of strange details in this. One of my favorite stupid things in this game is the chair system, which unlocks basically nothing and is tied into basically nothing. But basically there are chairs just all around the game, and the game has different ideas of what counts as a chair.
Come back in Harmony of Dissonance, by the way.
Yeah, where it would somehow make less sense. But, like, what's amazing to me is that the only acknowledgement this system has in the game is that you get to the end of the game, and you will find a room that is just full of every chair you've successfully sat on. And then if you've sat on all of them, it'll have a new chair in it that just is, like, a prize. But, like, the thing that's even dumber is that one of these chairs is literally only possible if you sit on it, like, during the final boss fight with Dracula. It's the dumbest thing. I love it. There's a lot of, like, one of my favorite images in any video game, I took a bunch of screenshots from this game every time I found a new stupid chair. There's, like, a bunch of anachronistic ones. There's a swing set, like a children's swing set you can sit on. And, like, if you look at the description in the game, it's like, oh, your mom left you at the park and forgot about you. And he's just, like, sitting, like, the very stereotypical, like, sad child sitting on the swing. It's such a great, stupid piece of imagery.
That's like contra-shattered shoulder extra footage of a canceled character because basically the developers were taking a piss and making a big gigantic joke that they all laughed to.
Yeah. But this game's full of that. There's like one of them's like Disneyland teacups. There's one that's like a game show podium. It's really strange. I don't know what they're doing in there, but I love them.
This game also has the cage rooms, but at least for the most part, once you complete them, you don't have to do it again. Only in certain areas that you have to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So you can just zip to one area to another to find extra secrets, because there's a lot of secrets in this game compared to the last game.
Yeah, especially, like, there'll be certain things where it's like, oh, this innocent devil gives you a movement ability, and you can use that to get back and, like, get something that you wouldn't have been able to get. It's interesting. It reincorporates some of the Metroid-y elements as well.
And, like, one of the most powerful weapons of the game is the Alucard Spear, which is the spear that Alucard used, which was named the Alucard Spear, because I guess they didn't want him to, like, be associated with Alucard or something. He gave it to them and they renamed it, I guess.
There's a lot of, like, that might be it, or it might just be that, like, the translators screwed up, because that happens a lot with this era of Castlevania.
Yeah, it's probably just always supposed to be the Alucard Spear, and then they own it because he gave it to them.
Yeah. But it's a neat game that I feel like people kind of people kind of remember Lament of Innocence. I don't feel like people tend to remember Curse of Darkness, but it's got a lot to recommend about it. It's definitely worth trying at least once.
Apparently a Moe statue is only in the PS2 version, and it's an innocent devil you can get.
That's a really cute Gradius reference, actually.
Well, you know, it's actually just a key item that doesn't have any function. It's just something you can get.
It's just cute that it's there.
You can play as Trevor, but he plays like kind of like Leon did.
Yeah, he's really strong. That's kind of his thing. Is like, oh, he can level up, I think, but
he doesn't have a story, though, unfortunately.
Yeah, he's just really strong. We won't see a bonus mode with a story for until we get into the handheld games.
But this game
also has one of.
This game also has like. one of the best, if not the best, soundtrack that Yamane has, or that Michiru has done. Michiru Yamane.
It's super good. It's absolutely worth, like, tracking that down, even if you don't want to play the game. The other thing I would say about it is that it has one of the strangest, like, going the extra mile things I've ever heard in a game's, like, voice dubbing, which is that they recorded an alternative Japanese dub, like some alternative lines in the Japanese dub for every time Trevor is referenced, so that they're saying Trevor in Japanese rather than Ralph. And that's only used in the English version of the game. Mm-hmm. Like, if you set the English version to play the Japanese voice track, it will use those lines.
Mm-hmm.
It's super weird.
Also, it has one of the most bizarre end credits songs ever that tops I Am the Wind. Because it's the soprano operatic song that comes out of nowhere.
It's fine. Don't think about it.
Also, you basically get a new girlfriend who looks exactly like your old girlfriend, so that's just weird.
Yeah, anytime...
And she looks like she came out of DOA.
Yeah, like, anytime a story tries to do that, and it's not doing the Silent Hill 2 thing, where it's like, this is really creepy and weird. Like, it's like, this is really creepy and weird. Why did you do this? At that point, you might as well have just said, oh, he kidnapped her, because at least then it's not, like, this weird thing that you've done. But, yeah, it's a neat game. I would recommend, if someone slept on it, to absolutely go back and play it, if you can accept the idea of a Castlevania game that is not a platformer.
Mm-hmm. Also, you get to find out that Death is apparently immortal, not because he's actually immortal, but because he's a time traveler, and so if you kill one in one timeline, another just shows up.
Oh, man, the time travel thing that they never really pay off. Saint Germain's a very strange character.
But,
good boss.
It just might be, like, the groundwork for Eon and Judgment. It's like, Eon's basically Death.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's also, like, this game's weird attachment to the meta plot via time travel.
Mm-hmm.
Such a weird addition that feels like they intended to pay it off at some point. It never really goes anywhere.
Mm-hmm. There's also an optional area in the game that's a tower. It's, like, really difficult because it has, like, restrictions each floor.
Oh, yeah, I remember doing that. So, yeah, there's a lot in this game to sink your teeth into if you want to make a long experience out of it.
Also, I think Dracula also has a form similar to the form in Castlevania Legacy of Darkness.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
They're not dissimilar. We'll go with that.
It's like, I like the exploration in this game, but there's a lot of areas in the game that are just empty.
Yeah,
especially Dracula's castle, where there's a bunch of hallways that are full of nothing.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, that's where why people oftentimes refer to this game as, like, complaining about Hector's slow running speed, and it's like he runs about as fast as Leon, but his environments are so much longer. Which is really the problem. They wanted the game to hit a certain target, like time to beat, and they don't have enough raw art assets to make as many environments as they do, so they just do a lot of, like, weird padding doing that. You kind of have to get used to it if you want to. Like, if you can get used to that, like, the game is quite good, but if not, I mean, I can understand.
I was wrong. It's like Saint Germain is the time traveler, but I think Death can also time travel somehow.
Yeah, I mean, he's Death. He should be able to. I like the games where the Beast Diary makes it clear that Death and Dracula consider each other friends.
Oh, yeah. The new girlfriend is basically Isaac's sister.
That seems healthy.
Yeah. And the whole plot about the game is that they're basically being manipulated by Dracula's curse to fight each other. And the victor was supposed to be Dracula's new vessel.
Yeah, it'll be the new Dracula, and then guess what? Hector's not really into that.
Yeah. It's just like, I'll just kill you again.
Dracula got to come back for like 7 total minutes and then got thrown out again.
And he'll have a good time. Really. It's like, that is the 3D Castlevania games, at least until the Lords of Shadow.
Yeah. They kept inching closer to being a really satisfying 3D Castlevania experience, but they never got the chance to really get it. And it's even kind of sadder because right as they were, I'm not sure, like, this kind of straddles the line between Lords of Shadow and regular Castlevania, but I'd say it fits here better. When they initially announced Lords of Shadow, they didn't call it Castlevania Lords of Shadow, they just called it Lords of Shadow.
Because it originally wasn't supposed to be a Castlevania game, I think.
There's debate on that. There is an initial pitch trailer that was just a game that Mercury Steam pitched that was a remake of original Castlevania in 3D.
I think Lords of the Shadow was supposed to be like a spiritual successor to their first game, which was called Jericho.
Yeah, Clive Barker's Jericho. Not great. Yeah. But the thing is, at the same time, there is a, at this point, relatively hard to track down, but it's still on YouTube, trailer for a PS3 Castlevania game directed by Iga, and the only thing that's in this concept trailer is Alucard flurrying a sword around.
Mm.
So clearly at some point they did approve a budget for a PS3, like, Symphony of the Night 2, some sort of 3D Castlevania on PS3 that was unceremoniously murdered immediately.
It's like, never they realized that they probably couldn't make a story out of it, so they candidate.
It's a shame. I would have liked to see Iga get that one last crack to try to get 3D Castlevania right, but
at least there's Nanobreaker.
Yeah, there's Nanobreaker, which is very much a halfway step between Lament of Innocence and Curse of Darkness.
But until next time, which we're finally going to talk about the GBA and DS games, and might as well throw in Bloodlines, because there's nowhere else to fit it. Plus, it's related to one of the DS games.
Yeah, it fits there, for reasons.
I could have talked about this game along with 3, but we were already, like, 8 games deep, so no.
Yeah, and it's also just, like, 3 is, like, this is a story sequel to 3, but gameplay-wise, it is much more a...
Yeah.
It's much more of a...
Symphony.
Lament of Innocence sequel.
But until next time, see you guys later.